in the dictionary, and it says, one who is the supreme controller. And then Prabhupada say, are you the supreme controller? So if you can't come up to that, what we say, qualification, you can't be God. So, one who knows everything, everywhere, at all times. So God is God, and dog is dog. So this was a common thing, Prabhupada is God. So in 1966, after giving the first initiation, Prabhupada gave a lecture, and he said one should see the spiritual master as being as good as God. And then that was the last thing he said in his lecture and left the podium, leaving everyone with their mouths wide open. What did he say? Now he's saying he's God. Before he was saying everyone who says he's God is dog. Now he's saying the opposite. And that caused a great confusion. But one devotee was a little bit more intelligent. He says, no, he's not God, but we should treat him or see him in the same way. So that's the idea, is that God sends his perfect representative, and therefore he's representing God. And therefore, just like the ambassador comes to a country and acts on behalf of the king or president of the country he's representative, and how he's treated by the visiting country is what he's going to report back to his, you know, king, president, like that. So how you treat the representative of God is your reflection on how you treat God, like that. So therefore, the spiritual master should be seen as and treated as God in person, but he's not God. Okay? Is that pretty much easy to understand? Any questions, comments on that one? Okay. And then there was a second incident that happened. Let's see. These are the impersonal fictions. Prabhupada is ISKCON. Prabhupada is the GBC. Prabhupada is the guru only for initiated disciples. Okay, Prabhupada is God, the first one. So here.
In fact, the spiritual master is to be honored as much as the Supreme Lord, because he is the most confidential servitor of the Lord.
Sri Guruvastarupam, actually it should be number 8 instead of number 7 there. Sri Guruvastam 8, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So here's the principle again. He's honored in the same way, but because he's the confidential servitor of the God. Okay. Here.
Facts. There is only one thing worse than underestimating the guru, overestimating the guru.
Wow.
They have said, I am God. Therefore, if I am God, they also can become God. This is impersonalism.
Mm.
Prabhupada's verdict on Prabhupada is God, recounted by Madhudvisapuri.
So this is a very interesting revolutionary statement. The one thing worse than underestimating the guru is overestimating the guru. That means when I become guru, I also become God. So, and what was this related to? Does anybody know the story that this is related to?
Is this the time when 4 devotees were traveling everywhere and saying Prabhupada is God?
4 sannyasis, yeah.
4 sannyasis?
Yeah.
Is this the story?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
And they were having meetings and calling the rank and file devotees and saying that God, Prabhupada's not saying it, but we know he's actually the Supreme Lord. But he's just so humble, he doesn't want to say it, but we actually know that. And then Prabhupada, this actually, the deviation started in New Vrindavan, where all deviations start. Well, at least it's the center of most of the deviations anyway. Hopefully things have changed. And so Prabhupada was in Tokyo during that time. This was in 1970, and devotees were having meetings. And there was a split. Some devotees were disagreeing with these 4 sannyasis, and others were agreeing with them and didn't know what was going on. And so, and they were very convincing, because they were sannyasis too. And when the word got back to Prabhupada, he immediately gave his second pranam mantra. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesa Sunyavadi Pastyatya De Satan. He added that mantra at the time of this, you know, what we say, controversy, which means that he wanted to clarify his position and to make sure that people would not misunderstand his position, that he's the servant of Saraswati Devi. He's come to the West with the message of Lord Chaitanya to do what? To destroy impersonalism and Mayavadism and voidism. So, but then Prabhupada said, these four sannyasis, they should be asked to leave ISKCON, and they can't stay in any of our temples, and they have to travel and preach. And they did. They followed Prabhupada's instructions, and they gave up their idea. And then after some time, they came back, and were in good standing again. But Prabhupada was really strong about that, because this idea that the spiritual master is God is the Mayavadi thing. The Guru is everything. The Guru is God. Guru Vishnu, Guru Brahma, Guru Shiva, Guru, Guru. The Guru's feet cover the whole existence. Yeah, and so the Guru is God, and when I become Guru, I also become God, and I don't need the Guru God because I'm already God. Right? So it's pretty much prominent. We laugh, but actually this is their philosophy, because it's very widespread, this particular idea. And so, you know, Prabhupada wanted that to be destroyed immediately before it started to infect people in the wrong consciousness. So he made this statement. Prabhupada is not God. He is the confidential servitor of God. He's come on the mission of the Lord, and therefore he is recognized as good as God, but he is not the personality of God. God is God, Guru is Guru. Anything else on that one before we move on? Okay. Who wants to read this one? Prabhupada is ISKCON. Okay.
Fact, ISKCON is the organization Srila Prabhupada founded to spread Krishna consciousness worldwide.
Some.
In fact, in ISKCON, Prabhupada himself remains present generation after generation as a single prominent Shishka guru imminent in the life of each and every ISKCON devotee, a perpetual indwelling, active, guiding, and directing presence. He is thus the soul of ISKCON.
Hmm. So sometimes Prabhupada says, but Prabhupada established ISKCON as his body, and then sometimes the body does get sick. The soul of the body is always pure and never contaminated or never subject to material, you know, affection. But the body can be subjected. So ISKCON can also go off. But Prabhupada can never go off. So the idea is Prabhupada is the Shiksha Guru inanimate in each and every life and in every devotee, a perpetually indwelling active guide and directing presence. He is the soul of ISKCON and not ISKCON itself. So when ISKCON gets sick, we have to treat the illness and correct it and bring it back to good health. So to say Prabhupada is ISKCON is not correct. That's the way we used to say it. If Prabhupada is ISKCON, therefore you should follow ISKCON. Well, yeah, we'll follow ISKCON if it's following Prabhupada. But if it's not following Prabhupada, then there has to be some change in order to bring it back to the right standard like that. Not that we give up ISKCON, but at the same time, we may not follow the deviations that come by way of wrong understanding. Okay, it looks a little dark in here. Is there, maybe we can put one of the set of lights on, the one on the very end, the last switch on the left. Yeah, that's a little better. Okay, is that all right for everyone? I can see it now. Before it was a lot of shadows. Okay, anything else? Prabhupada is ISKCON? Yes. How many of you, don't raise your hand, but how many of you actually believed that Prabhupada was ISKCON? Don't raise your hand. You believed it, huh? It's wrong. It's wrong. Yeah. Well, yeah, Prabhupada's the soul of ISKCON. Prabhupada's not ISKCON. The body gets sick, but the soul is always pure. Yes?
This was actually a little in regards to the previous point, but we see many of our previous acharyas gave reference of their eternal identity, their Swarup Siddhi, the perfected, or their spiritual position. So, mm-hmm. From what I've heard, Prabhupada never mentioned that, and there's no knowledge about that. I just was checking that with you.
Prabhupada's internal mood? He was asked twice that I know of. The first time he was asked, what is your internal position? What is your rasa? Prabhupada said, that you do not require. It's none of your business. Basically. That was the first answer. And then the second time he was asked, he said, if I told you, you would faint. And that was the end of that conversation. So he didn't want people to get the wrong impression, because if they know a third person's internal mood, they may treat him differently. Also, if you also know your internal mood, you might think, well, I'm a gopi. Why am I sweeping the floor? So we don't... We don't really focus on these things at all. The idea is to think how when Bhakti Siddhanta was asked this question, he says your internal mood is Trinadapi Sunuchena Taihori Vasu Hishnuna Amanina Mamanadena. He said this is your identity. And when Prabhupada was asked about this, he says, when the disciple is ready, the spiritual master comes and reveals their internal mood like that. So that's for us. But for Prabhupada, he never talked about it. He did give some indications in his statements who he might be in terms of rasa. There's a few indications there. But aside from that, he never said anything directly. People can, what we say, philosophically speculate according to Prabhupada's own statements about what was his internal mood. And there was a whole book that was put out by one God brother about that too. Yeah. Give her the microphone. She wants to say something. Wait till the microphone gets to you, and then you can speak.
I think I was believing that Prabhupada was ISKCON because for many, many years I thought that and believed that. No, because I think psychologically I was dealing with my own, impediment. I felt that was like my anchor to stay in ISKCON. I felt like if I would ever leave ISKCON, I would be leaving Prabhupada. So if I think Prabhupada is ISKCON, I would never leave ISKCON.
Prabhupada said that, if you go outside of ISKCON, then you actually leave me. Yeah, but this institution is created by Prabhupada, and the institution may also go off. That doesn't mean Prabhupada's off. That's the point. Here, you can read that. It's a position paper by Ravindra Sarup that was acknowledged by the GBC. ISKCON is the organization founded by Prabhupada. Prabhupada himself remains present. He's the guru inanimate in the life of each and every devotee, a perpetual indwelling active guide in directing prayer. He's the soul of ISKCON.
Right.
Just like you have a body, but that your body is not you. If your body gets sick, doesn't mean you're sick, it means your body's sick.
But that was my anchor, you know, that's what kind of like helped
me. Yeah, but
me.
Find a real anchor.
Psychologically, yeah.
That's an anchor, but it's a wrong anchor. Because if ISKCON somehow or other goes off, that doesn't mean Prabhupada's off.
Exactly. But I think that's what I was thinking, that was strength for the movement to stay on shore.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if there's some problem, if somehow or other ISKCON or some of the things in ISKCON is wrong, we should correct it. We shouldn't leave it. But we shouldn't ignore it either and say everything that goes on, it's Prabhupada. No, it's not necessarily true. Yeah. Yes, Mataji had a... You're okay? No? Okay. Charya?
I thought I heard once in a lecture, Prabhupada said this movement, or ISKCON, is the incarnation of Krishna.
Yeah, well, there's the Chaitanya tree, where ISKCON is a branch of Lord Chaitanya. Yeah, that's also mentioned in the purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where there are different branches of Lord Chaitanya's tree, and the present branch of the tree, a big branch, is ISKCON. Because it's coming from Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya brings his branches to different places in the world. He is the trunk. The branches are Nityananda, Gadadhar, Advaita. And this ISKCON movement isn't a branch of Lord Chaitanya's movement. A big branch, yeah. But the point is, you know, when things go off and they stop following Prabhupada, if something goes off, it's not Prabhupada anymore. I can give you a nice story about that, too. What happened in New Vrindavan, and Prabhupada actually left. He gave us visual signs that he was no longer present there during the time of the deviations. He used an ordinary lady who was a visitor there to illustrate that I'm gone. My deity is still there, but I'm not there anymore. So, yeah. And everyone was thinking, yeah, Prabhupada's still there, but he wasn't. He actually left. That's a long story, and I'll skip over it because it's quite detailed. But you can ask me at another time and I'll tell you the whole story. Prabhupada gave visual signs that I'm gone. Because you have taken a unchangeable principle and changed it. So he was no longer there. Okay, so we're learning a little bit about the history of ISKCON. Don't get scared. It's Lord Chaitanya's movement. Okay, here's another one. Where's this at? Who knows? Who knows the setting? I think it's Vrindavan. I think it is Vrindavan, yeah. But I'm not exactly sure. There's Yadubara, there's Rupanuga, somebody, who else? There is, huh? You know who this is? Navayogendra Maharaj, pretty much sure. Shruti Kirti. Upanuga, I think. Some of the other devotees, I don't know. This one looks familiar. I forgot his name. Looks like Dhananjaya. Satsrupa, where? Here? Satsrupa? Yeah, could be. Where? Here? 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 No? I think that's Akshaya Maharaj. What's his name? Akshayananda. Akshayananda. Yeah, he was the temple president of Vrindavan. Okay. Someone read?
Fiction. Fiction. Prabhupada is GBC. Fact. The governing body commission, GBC, will be the ultimate managing authority of the entire International Society for Krishna Consciousness, from Srila Prabhupada's Declaration of Will, 4th June, 1977.
Yeah. Prabhupada's not the GBC. He's established the DBC as the ultimate managing authority. Okay. Any questions on that one? That one's easy. Okay. Fiction.
Prabhupada is the guru only of his initiated disciples. In fact, Srila Prabhupada is the foundational Shikshak guru for all ISKCON devotees because he has realized and presented the teachings of the previous acharyas of the Brahma Madhva, Gaudiya, Sampradaya appropriately for the modern age.
So he's a foundational Siksha Guru for everyone in ISKCON. In other words, anyone who comes into this movement actually has a direct connection with Prabhupada as the Siksha Guru. And Siksha and Diksha are the same. So therefore, he's not limited. That's limiting Prabhupada to only to his initiated disciples. So that's a misunderstanding also. Any questions about that? This is very inspiring to hear this. This is a major, major point because some people say, oh, I missed Prabhupada. I came too late. Well, no, Prabhupada's just as much available, not in his personal form, but in his instructions and through the lives of his devotees. You can learn about Prabhupada and you can also have a direct relation with Prabhupada. It's like Prabhupada sitting on the Vyasasana now. Everyone thinks, oh, it's a deity. But for some, it's a deity. For some, he's not even there. You walk past him like he's some furniture. But for his disciples, they know he's completely there, 100%. And there's that story that was written by Ritta Prabhu when he wrote an account of Prabhupada's coming to Africa. Or actually, he was writing about the yatras in Africa. So the devotees had gotten a murti of Prabhupada to bring into one temple in Africa. And so they were trying to get it in past the immigrations. And the immigration officer said, well, you don't have the proper papers. We can't let this in. You get your papers in order, and you can take the deity in. And in the meantime, we'll keep the deity in our storeroom. So they did. Put the deity in the storeroom, and devotees left. 2 days later, the devotees got a call from the immigration. He says he wants to go. He says, take me out of here. So Prabhupada was speaking, and even the immigration officers could hear it. Take me out of here. So the deity can also talk, but it's not easy to talk to the deity. You have to be qualified. So Prabhupada's personally present in his deity form also. As he's present in his books, he's present in his instructions, he's present in the lives of his devotees. So we can always get Prabhupada's association, his shiksha, in many different ways. And that's higher than personal association, because personal association, many people had personal association but left the movement. Personal association, as Prabhupada said, may be beneficial, may not be. So what to do? Yes. Avila? Avella? That microphone's coming.
So, the first slide was Prabhupada is God, and you know we understand that he is not God. But at the same time, when we talk about Prabhupada's deity reciprocating, just like Krishna's deity reciprocates, how do you understand from proper perspective that my understanding is Prabhupada is a jiva, empowered jiva, Shakti Veshavatar, but at the same time. So how does he? How does this work?
What do you mean? What's your question?
The fact that his deity is as good as him.
Yeah.
And Krishna, I mean, for my understanding, it was God is like that. That God's deity and God is non-different.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, Srila Prabhupada's deity and Srila Prabhupada is non-different.
Yeah, because he's a liberated soul. Liberated soul is not bound by material considerations. Liberation means no material boundaries. So he can be personally present in his deity, and he is.
And simultaneously present in all the temples of ISKCON.
Yeah. That's liberation. When you be liberated, you can be anywhere at the same, many places at the same time. That's a fact. Liberation means no limitation, no material limitation anyway. But for a great soul, that's even higher because by the will of God, they're still very much active, not only present, but active. Prabhupada's still directing the movement in different ways, by his personal presence, by his deity, in different ways. The advanced devotees, they go up to Prabhupada and they offer prayers and they say, Prabhupada, what can we do to serve you? And Prabhupada tells them. And then they carry it out. So, yeah. Prabhupada's still there and personally directing it. And anybody can have a relationship with Prabhupada, but it requires some purity and it requires some humility also. And faith. It takes some faith like that. That faith has to be there. He's personally present. Even people look at the deity, they think it's a real person. It is, in that sense. But in another sense, it's a deity. It's both. It's a matter of vision. It's a matter of vision. I mean, we can all tell experiences where we said something to Prabhupada and Prabhupada talked back to us. We all have an experience like that. You can even do that with a picture. If you're sincerely praying to the picture will also talk to you. Yeah, but it's, again, it's not something that comes ordinarily. It takes faith. It takes a lot of faith. Okay, so yeah, that's, Prabhupada's there. That's why when you're there addressing the deity, you should understand that's Krishna, that's the spiritual master, that's Jagannath. It's not just a deity. When you're viewing, taking darshan, that's the Lord. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, when people vision the deity, they see in three different possible ways. One is simply an idol, something created. Two, as a representation. And three, as the actual object. So even devotees think, well, a deity is nice, but it's simply a representation of God. Well, that falls short of the actual definition. Because a deity can eat, can walk, can talk, can also leave too. If the standard falls down very low, and has in certain places, the deity will leave. He leaves in different ways. Somebody steals him, or he burns up, or something happens. He arranges to be, you know, to disappear. Yes. No, give it to Asraya. His hand is getting tired. He's holding it up for the last 150 years.
Thank you, Maharaj. The last slide, I didn't ask quickly enough, but the GBC is Srila Prabhupada, or Srila Prabhupada is the GBC. I can't remember which way it was, but Prabhupada is the GBC, I guess. There was the statement that Srila Prabhupada established the GBC as the ultimate managing authority.
Yeah.
Is it also the case that, just trying to clarify this point, that the GBC is the one to clarify Srila Prabhupada's teachings also, and in that sense they represent Srila Prabhupada?
They have a Shastra committee where this committee has been elected in the last 10 years, where there's a group of devotees that review Shastra and give some conclusion according to, you know, the circumstance. Some things will go to before the Shastra committee, and the Shastra committee will research Prabhupada's books, discuss it, and come up with some conclusion in that case. Yeah. But ultimate managing authority. In other words, if things go wrong on one level, you can go to the next level and make your complaint, your petition. And if you're not satisfied on that level, you can go all the way up to, just like the court systems in the country. And then ultimately you have to accept what the GBC mandates, because there has to be some form of what we say structure in order to make decisions both on Shastra and management. Otherwise we have chaos. Mm-hmm. So the GBC could also be wrong, but we have to work with that too. We have to fine-tune it to make it more and more relevant to Prabhupada's instructions and more representative of Srila Prabhupada. So that's why it's not Prabhupada, but it's Prabhupada's ultimate managing authority. Okay. Anything else on any of the fictional parts? We'll get into the sentimental ones now. Sentimental.
Maharaj, just on the point there.
Love, love, love. Love, love, love. Go ahead.
That Prabhupada is present in each of his temples simultaneously. Do you feel Prabhupada is pleased with the way the movement is going today, right now?
Depends where you go. You can see, if you have the eyes, you can come in front of Prabhupada's deity and you can see. And you go to some places, you can see Prabhupada's not happy. And some places you can see Prabhupada's really happy. If you go to Soho Street in London, Prabhupada is beaming with happiness. He's just like, you can see it. And that temple is just highly organized on book distribution and Harinam. They do two Harinams a day. They do book distribution throughout the year. They're always one of the leading temples. And Prabhupada's just like, you can see he's so happy. But you go to other temples, you can see Prabhupada's very concerned. It's not the way the deity's made either. You can see Prabhupada's concern like that. Here in Chicago, he's getting happier and happier. That's one thing I can tell. He seems to be more and more pleased as time goes on. But still, you can make him smile more yet. So. Yeah, so you can, Prabhupada reveals himself. It's not so hard if you're a little, what we say, reflective. Okay. Of course, he's also relating to you, too. If you go in front of Prabhupada and you don't look so good, he's not going to look so good either. He's going to look at, what are you? You're nonsense. No sense. But if you come there humbly and petition his mercy and pray for his and thank him for everything you do, you can see there'll be a smile on Prabhupada's face. Like that. So yeah, he's there in his deity. But don't imagine. That's another fault. Okay. Sentimental. What is sentiment? Sentiment is something that's not based on intelligence, right? Sentiment, there's what we call good sentiment and wrong sentiment. Or right, correct sentiment and wrong sentiment. Sentiment that's based on intelligence is good sentiment. Sentiment that's based on a lack of intelligence or a lack of understanding is called sentimental. Okay, what's a sentimental one? Illusionary Prabhupada, figurehead Prabhupada, Vapu limited Prabhupada. Prabhupada is the perpetual initiator, illusionary Prabhupada.
I had been imagining a Prabhupada that allowed a compromise of purity and Krishna conscious practices. When I was suddenly confronted by the real Prabhupada, the illusory Prabhupada dissolved like mist after sunrise. Prabhupada, as he himself said, was 90% liberal, but that other 10% was strict.
So we can imagine what Prabhupada's like, and that's illusionary. So he said, I'm quite liberal. In other words, in transplanting this Vedic culture to the West, he had to made a lot of adjustments. You know, he allowed so many types of things to happen that would never usually happen in a stricter environment. Because he knew he had to be very liberal. You know, when the first kirtans were coming, people could bring anything for kirtans. They were bringing all their homemade instruments and drums and, you know, gourds and whatever else they were playing. Prabhupada didn't mind. And they were dancing all kinds of crazy ways, Prabhupada. You know. And, you know. But then gradually, he started to tighten up as time went on. But he couldn't be like that in the beginning. And then he still was very flexible, because he knew Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda were very merciful. So he allowed people who weren't up to the standard to somehow or other continue, and hoping they would come up to the standard eventually. Like that. Hare Krishna. Thank you for coming. Okay, any question about this one? Chark?
You said that, you know, we can't imagine Prabhupada. So for those of us that don't have we haven't had his direct association, I mean, how can we get a sense of this kind of scale, liberal and strict? I mean, our relationship with Prabhupada can be, you know, we have association with films, books, teachings, hearing, but how do we prevent ourselves from, like you said, not imagining?
Well, if you're not sure, then ask. But when you read, things should be clear. And read until things actually become more clear, clear. Don't imagine things. When you read, if you understand, then there's no problem. But if you're not understanding, and then you imagine something because of lack of understanding, then that's the opportunity to fall into something sentimental. You know, Prabhupada did certain things according to time, place, and circumstance that people designate as really what Prabhupada wanted, you know. For instance, Prabhupada, you know, I don't know, somebody gave him chocolate one time and he ate it. But, you know, it doesn't mean he sanctioned chocolate, he didn't. You know, Prabhupada was a person too, and he had likes and dislikes, just like any individual has. But at the same time, he organized the movement according to Shastra, according to the previous acharyas, like that. So there's the personality of Prabhupada, and that's what we're talking about here. And then there's also the other fictionals. And the first fictional was the impersonal fictions. Now these are the sentimental fictions. The personality of Prabhupada is seen in a different way. Just like some people say, Prabhupada is, he's so strict. Yes, he was, but he was also so liberal. He was both, depending on the situation. He could be like a lion, and he could also be like a lamb. So if you try to put him into one of the two categories, you might limit him like that. And that's what Borijan is saying here. You know, I saw him one way, but then I realized he was different. Because certain people like certain aspects of Prabhupada, and they not dislike, but they don't focus on other aspects of him. And vice versa. Like, there's one God brother I know, he just likes the strict, strong speaking Prabhupada. And he, for him, that's Prabhupada. Anything less is not Prabhupada. He doesn't really see these other things as Prabhupada so much. He just focused on the hard speaking, strict, you know, cut him to the ground Prabhupada. But that Prabhupada was more than that, you know. Like one time, you know, sometimes people would challenge Prabhupada and Prabhupada would defeat him and tear him to bits, but sometimes he wouldn't. Like one time Prabhupada was talking about different classes of men. There are the first class men, second class men, third class men, fourth class men. And one very, what we say, I don't know, what was the person? The person was just very rude and got up and said, "You think you're first class," he said to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada remained quiet for a few minutes, and then tears started to go down his cheek. He said, "I am not first class. I am fifth class, but I'm trying to serve the first class." I mean, he could have answered that question anyway, but he took it to heart, and he just was very humble, like a lamb. And the person said, "You think you're first class." He said, "I am trying to serve the first class, but I'm actually fifth class." So you can never understand how Prabhupada was going to react to a situation. That's an example. Figurehead Prabhupada. Who do we have there? She's the figure. She's not really the ruler of London, but she thinks she is. The Queen of England. So, figurehead Prabhupada, what does that mean? Ah, watch out. Here we go. Here we go. Watch this one. Go for it.
The guru is not like a family priest for performing ritual ceremonies. Nor is he a figurehead appointed by the institution without real presence in the heart and mind of the disciple. Rather, the spiritual master is the center of the disciple's very being. He is my Lord, birth after birth.
Yeah,
Vaishnava behavior, Satsur Das Goswami.
Hmm. So he's not just a family priest. He's not a person for rituals and ceremonies. He's not there just to ashibad. And one time, one respectable, nicely dressed couple, Prabhupada was in India. He had just finished his lecture. A man came up to him with his wife. He said, "Swamiji, give me your blessings." Prabhupada said, "You don't want my blessings." "No, Swamiji, please, 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 give me your blessings. Swamiji, please." "You don't want my blessing." "But Swamiji, please give me blessings." "All right, I bless you. Your material life is finished." And that's the last time we saw him. Didn't say a word, just drifted into the crowd. So he's not there to simply to perform rituals or, you know, bless babies, collect donations, eat nice prasad. Swamiji, please tell me what I like to hear. The guru is supposed to be very nice. He smiles all the time. Prabhupada's really smiling there, isn't he? Sorry about that. there was that one devotee said to Prabhupada in New Vrindavan. He said, Prabhupada was one devotee said to Prabhupada, my friends, they see a picture of you and they say, why does your guru look so sad? Because, you know, the typical smiling Indian guru with sparkling eyes and nice beards and so many nice things. And then Prabhupada said, let me see the picture. So he gave the devotee had the picture. Prabhupada looked at it, and it was Prabhupada when he took sannyas, and he was like, you seen that picture? Very grave. Prabhupada said, that was one of my happiest moments. So, you know, sometimes we expect the guru to be like, ah. Oh. But Guruji, Guruji, please bless me that I can get a good husband or a nice baby. Guruji, Gigi, I have lots of money and I'll put you in my will if you give me nice blessings. Some people approach the guru for, you know, you give blessings, we give you money. Well, the guru is not like that. He's not a ritualistic thing. He's the center of the disciple's very being. He's as good as Krishna in our life. He is, in fact, our connection with Krishna. He's not there just to perform rituals. It was one time Prabhupada was in Nellore in India. And one lady, she was very rich, very wealthy, very prestigious, and she wanted to do a Didi installation. And so Prabhupada was in the area. She invited Prabhupada to officiate the Didi ceremony. And Prabhupada could note that this lady is simply interested in some prestige, because she invited a lot of people just to show that she's very prestigious. And, you know, she was looking for recognition. And Prabhupada noted that in her. Nobody else saw it, but he did. So she said, Swamiji, can you do the puja? Prabhupada said, give me a conch shell. And said, give me some milk. And then he said, Govindam Adi Purusham Tam Maham Bhajami. Poured the milk, said, Didi's installed. Finished. It was over in 1 minute. She said, there's more. Prabhupada said, Didi's installed. He didn't want to play around with this big ceremony because she wanted some prestige, oh, putting on this big show, you know. So he's not interested in all that. He's not just performing rituals, you know, like that. Figurehead, Prabhupada. Figurehead really means nothing. It means there's no allegiance to a figurehead. Okay. Where's this? Who knows where this is? It's in Europe somewhere. Germany, correct. This is Bhakti Bhushan Maharaj. I don't know if you know him. He doesn't travel so much in this area. And there's a few other These are all German devotees here. Okay. So this is called Vapu Limited Prabhupada. Who would like to read? Ashraya?
There are two ways of association, by Vani and by Vapu. Vani means words, and Vapu means physical presence. Physical presence is sometimes appreciable and sometimes not, but Vani continues to exist eternally. Therefore, we must take advantage of the Vani, not the physical presence. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anjalila, concluding words.
So, as we mentioned earlier, Vapu may be beneficial or it may not be. It may also cause you to go down, but Vani is the connection, and Vani is eternal. When Malati Devi was serving Prabhupada, at one point she was separated from her service from Prabhupada, and being away for a while, she wrote a letter to Prabhupada saying, "I'm feeling your separation greatly, Swami." Swamiji, he was known as Swamiji at the time. Prabhupada wrote back, "That's very nice, but you should understand that the spiritual master is not the body, but the principle of devotional service to Krishna. He's the principle of devotional service to Krishna. So if you're serving Krishna, then, and I am serving Krishna, we are connected. There's no question of separation." So separation is also is on the material platform. And spiritual separation just enhances the quality of the relationship because it causes us to, what we say, increase our devotional life. When sometimes Prabhupada would leave and go to another temple, the devotees there, their service would go down. And Prabhupada would be disappointed. He said, "I'm still personally present, so you should serve as if I'm still here." Not like, okay, he's gone, therefore we're not so enthusiastic. So, okay, physical presence. Vapu Limited Prabhupada. His words and his physical presence. The words will always be with you, the physical presence will not be. Therefore, we have to connect with the words. And the words are actually the association. Like that. When Prabhupada was asked, just before he was asked at one point, "When you leave us, Srila Prabhupada, how will we get your association?" He said, "You read my books, I'm in my books. If you read my books, you can associate with me directly." So there's the connection. Reading Srila Prabhupada's books means direct association with Prabhupada. And that's wonderful. Because Prabhupada left himself in the form of these books. And he also said that these purports are my ecstasies. So not only do you get the association of Prabhupada, but you get the association in a very wonderful way. He's expressing his transcendental ecstasy in the form of making explanations on the verses. So it's the Vani is so powerful. Vani will always be with you. Vapa will never be. Will not always be there. And there are many persons who have had association with Prabhupada, never had association with Prabhupada, and become really, what we say, surrendered to Prabhupada. They read his books, or they, you know, somehow or other came in contact with his movement, and they feel very much connected to Prabhupada. So it's not personal association, that's the topmost. Okay. Here we go. Little controversy.
Prabhupada's perpetual initiator. Keep trained up very rigidly and then you are bona fide guru and you can accept disciples on the same principle. But as a matter of etiquette, it is the custom that during the lifetime of your spiritual master, you bring the prospective disciples to him, and in his absence or disappearance, you can accept disciples without any limitation. This is the law of disciplic succession. I want to see my disciples become bona fide spiritual master and spread Krishna consciousness very widely. That will make me and Krishna very happy. Letter to Toshta Krishna, 2nd December, 1975.
Mm-hmm. Way back in 75, Prabhupada was telling us we can become spiritual masters, but not in the presence of the one's own spiritual master. So the idea that Prabhupada is the only initiating guru and everyone else is simply a ritvik or a lesser position means the end of the cyclic succession. So therefore, it has no real philosophical basis, nor did Priya Prabhupada say that. There are those who take certain words out of context and give their own explanations to say that, you know, after Prabhupada it all ended, you know. So, but that's not true. Any questions on this one? Question.
What does it really mean to be a spiritual master?
Huh?
What does it really mean to be a spiritual master?
In this case, it says you can become spiritual master and bring perspective. You can accept disciples without any limitation. You can accept disciples and you can be initiating guru, but you have to be qualified. What's the qualification? Prabhupada explains that, yes. Nityananda Pran Prabhu.
In this context, it is specifically about Diksha.
Hmm?
In this context, it is specifically Diksha relationship is being spoken about as an initiating.
Yeah, he's talking about initiating spiritual master. In this case, just to give us a clarification that it'll go like this. Prabhupada and then the disciples who are gurus and then they'll have their disciples. But everything will still be connected to Prabhupada. It'll be like branches coming from the same trunk, but all connected to the same trunk. Like that. And that's why we're having this seminar, so we can always keep connected. Even though the disciples are becoming gurus and they're having their disciples and those disciples may also become guru and have their disciples. We're all connected to Prabhupada. It's not that as we go down the line there's a whole new set of sampradaya. It's all part of the same connection, but it's branching off. That's all. It's like Lord Chaitanya was there, Lord Nityananda was there, but Lord Nityananda also was initiating certain people. And then they became gurus, and they also had their disciples too, but all connected to Lord Chaitanya. Mm-hmm. Okay, so anything else on this one? This is a real controversial one. Yes.
What is the meaning of the word ritvik?
Which one?
It's not here.
Ritvik?
What's the meaning of the word?
Ritvik means priest, pretty much. One who officiates on behalf of. That's what Ritvik means. One who officiates on behalf of. So, in other words, the present gurus are seen as simply officiators for Prabhupada. But Prabhupada's the guru. You know, just like if the temple president is absent, then he may appoint someone to do the work while he's gone. So that person's officiating on behalf of the temple president, but he's not the temple president. But that's not the correct understanding. There are ritviks, but Prabhupada didn't create a ritvik system. We are representing Prabhupada, but we are also considered to be in line of the cyclic succession. So the disciples also can be full-on spiritual masters, representing. Because we're coming in the line of Srila Prabhupada, where our teachings and our activities are based on what Prabhupada gives us. That's what it calls chastity to the previous spiritual master. There are those who broke off from Prabhupada and became gurus on their own and started their own little movement. That happened a lot. There's a lot of those persons. But that doesn't mean that they're representing Prabhupada. They say they were. There's even, you can talk to them and they'll even give you philosophical arguments. I know one guru, he's very much connected to Prabhupada but doesn't like ISKCON. So he's outside of ISKCON and he has his own little group and he's making disciples and he's very fixed up in Krishna consciousness and he says he's following Prabhupada, but at the same time he's not in ISKCON. So that's a tough one to evaluate. How much is he actually following Prabhupada? But he's powerful. When he preaches, he's really powerful. And I don't think anybody can go up against him in philosophy. He really knows the philosophy really good. I mean, maybe some people can, but... So, but the question is, that's between him and Prabhupada. So he has some issue with ISKCON, but not with Prabhupada. So we have a lot of this going on. So we have to see that if you really want to follow Prabhupada, stay within ISKCON and do the work that Prabhupada wants you to do within the context of what the society he gave us and not outside it. Yes. Yes, Asraya. Asraya.
I was just going to express my sense of the issue with this particular misconception.
Yeah, we're ready. Just fire away.
Fire away. Okay. For what it's worth. That this is meant, kind of this presentation that you're giving us is meant to help us overcome the lack of presence of Srila Prabhupada that has kind of instigated that kind of backlash that people want to throw out everybody else because people felt like persons were presenting themselves as independent of Srila Prabhupada and saying, I'm a spiritual master. And then when they weren't...
up to the standard.
Yeah, holding up that standard, then they said, well, you threw away Prabhupada and now who are you? So back to Prabhupada. So this whole understanding is so vital for us to be able to survive as a strong ISKCON that can convince others that we're actually viable because the connection to Prabhupada and the proper understanding by the persons following, those who are following Prabhupada, is the thing that makes others unable to argue against ISKCON's system.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Nice evaluation. Otherwise, where do we... You know, we can create parallel lines of understanding of Prabhupada's teachings, but then ultimately the GBC has to legislate and decide what is the actual standard as far as protocol and philosophical clarity, both. Otherwise, where do we go? Let's put it this way. ISKCON is a movement in developing. To say it's perfect would be a mistake. To say it doesn't work is also a mistake. It's a constant struggle to bring us closer and closer to what Prabhupada wanted us to be. So to deal with the lacks and create a deviation back based on the lack is really somewhat a cop-out or a lack of responsibility. Make the stay in, fight, make the changes, that's all. Bring it up to the standard. Yes, Janakinath.
Hi, Krishna.
Nice and loud.
Just a quick clarification. When the guru, initiating guru, is still present in the world, he's sannyas disciple, he can't accept disciples, right?
In precept, that's correct, but there was the GBC made an exception just about 10 years ago when Mahavishnu Swami, the elderly Mahavishnu Swami, he was getting a lot of followers and ultimately they wanted him to become their spiritual master. And his spiritual master is Shivaram Maharaj. Shiva Ram Maharaj was personally present on the planet, and he still is. So that the GBC had to deal with that issue. Should we let Mahavishnu Swami become initiating guru in the presence of his, initiating spiritual master, which was Shiva Ram Maharaj? So, and it was a long debate, and finally they gave him that option. So each issue now has to go before the GBC and be judged individually. It's not a new like a new precedent has been set. In this case, Mahavishnu Swami was in his 80s, and he was getting a long list of people who wanted to be his disciple. And he was also in favor of that too, so that change was made by the GBC. And they're, I think, using certain precedents. I'm not sure which precedents, I can't quote them, but I think they went into the history and found some exceptions also. But this is the general rule. And Prabhupada's speaking about the general rule here. Avila? Avila?
Maharaj, this letter clearly defies the Ritvik theology.
Yeah, we use this as the main one. Yeah.
So, do you happen to know how they defend this letter from their perspective?
No, they use other things. They use certain, Prabhupada made certain statements that they take out of context. Henceforth, they built a whole theory on this word henceforth. When Prabhupada said henceforth now, I forgot what context. It was in May 1977, Prabhupada wrote one letter. And they take it out of context and say this isn't. And what fuels their argument is that every time a guru in our spirit, in our line falls down, they say, just see, this proves. So they get ammunition every time one of the Prabhupada's disciples falls down, who's a guru. It just shows that that person really is not a guru, and Prabhupada never wanted them to be a full guru, and they're acting out of that capacity, and therefore they're being revealed. And you'll all fall down sooner or later. That's what they're thinking. So they get fuel from the negativity, which fortifies their arguments, just saying, see, and people believe that. But then again, what about those who are not going to fall down? Or those who haven't fallen down and have attained samadhi, like Tamal Krishna Goswami, or, Bhakti Srup Damodar Goswami, all great acharyas who, were perfect throughout their whole Krishna consciousness, had many disciples and left the world in full Krishna consciousness. But they don't look at those, they just look at them. But there's a whole argument that they use based on one word that Prabhupada said. But if you study the Ritvik if you study their life, they don't do much service. All they do is try to criticize us. That's their whole service. That's it. Their whole program is simply to attack us. That's all. They have a whole magazine. If you see the magazine, throw it away. It's called Back to Prabhupada. Don't even open it up. It's just full of blasphemy. They're disenfranchised because of their own bad experiences, and therefore this theory just justifies their own going away from the movement. It's a way to justify your own mistakes or your own inadequacies. There's a book written, 100 Arguments That Defeated the Ritviks. There's many books. There's one called Plain Vanilla. Read that one by Jayadvaita Maharaj, Plain Vanilla. And then there's one, 100 Reasons Why the Ritviks Are Wrong. Only 100. So be careful, because they'll come into your temple one day and act like they're real devotees, and then pretty soon they hand you one of their scandal sheets called, back to Prabhupada. I deal with it all the time. You know, somebody says, Maharaj, I got this magazine. Then I have to very carefully try to explain things, and it's really difficult. But if you study Prabhupada's instructions, he never sanctioned that particular way that the disciplic succession should go on. He said, you know, you become spiritual master also. And he's quoting Lord Chaitanya, by my guru, by my command, be guru, save the land. So, but where's our power coming from? Not from our own spiritual practice, partly, but mostly from our connection to Prabhupada. As long as we stay connected to Prabhupada, we're okay. But then again, for a spiritual master to take on too many disciples is also dangerous. Because too much disciples means too much karmic burden. So that's also, and Lord Chaitanya cautions against that. That's why there's always a search for more and more spiritual masters in ISKCON so we can spread the mercy out in different ways. If you have too many disciples, it's a risk in your own spiritual practice. Okay. Getting into some pretty interesting arguments here. Yes, Prabhu, what's your name again?
Prasad.
Prasad.
Yes.
We had, that was an hour ago, no, 2 hours ago, Prasad. It's coming up again soon. There's one thing about Krishna consciousness, there's always Prasad.
Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, Ritvik, they used to keep Prabhupada on the Prabhupada Vyasasana.
Huh?
The Ritvik people, they usually keep the in the temples. That's what I heard. They used to keep the Prabhupada on the Prabhupada Vyasasana. So how the deities and Prabhupada remain happy in that condition, in this philosophy, in this philosophical condition? When the people enter the temple, they start shooting with the different words, different philosophies. So how the deities are happy and how the temples are flourishing? We can see a big temple in the Bangalore. It's a very big temple. So how the temple are flourishing, how the deities are happy with this situation?
Who says they are?
How the temple are flourishing.
What does flourishing mean? Prabhupada said money and manpower is not the sign of advancement. There are many institutions that have a lot of money and manpower. But what's the internal mood? Sign of advancement is purity, surrender, not. You know, you don't judge a thing by how many people are coming. Because in Kali Yuga, people will come anyway. But, I mean, you can be a guru. Just go out on the corner, dress up in a certain way, and start preaching. You'll have a few disciples in no time. It's not hard to make disciples in Kali Yuga. Right? Yeah. Everybody's, you know, this is the age of Kali. People take things cheaply. Our movement's not cheap, therefore, to become a devotee in Krishna consciousness is not easy. It's not about, being in the temple. It's about purifying the heart. So yeah, there's a lot of temples, there's a lot of institutions. There's a lot of governments that have decadent leaders also, and they're flourishing, right? So flourishing materially doesn't mean success spiritually. Don't judge it like that. Wait till the mic comes. Okay, start again.
Is the Bangalore ISKCON temple in the process of coming back to ISKCON, or
which temple?
Bangalore.
Bangalore, yeah. The Supreme Court ruled in our favor.
It is now ISKCON temple?
Yeah, that was the final verdict. And now it's a matter of bringing it back. I think the case is settled. Your spiritual master put something on the website about a month ago saying it's pretty much all over.
Okay. So
it was a long fight, yeah.
I don't have the second question. The second question is, like, we usually come across many people coming from Bangalore, and they come and say they are so impressed by the Bangalore temple. They have been there many times.
I was there. I wasn't impressed.
Yeah, and so
I thought it was more like a museum.
So anyway, when they come, my question was, like, I was not sure.
If you're impressed by the external, yeah, their external is really highly organized. But I went in there. I didn't feel any spiritual. It was dry. I didn't feel that spiritual energy.
So when they come to us, I did not know where the temple is at this point of time until you told me just now. But I always used to wonder when people come and tell that Ritwik-run temple is wonderful, is it our duty to inform them that that is they are not really following Prabhupada's teachings? Or
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, tell them. Tell them to go to the Jagannath temple in Bangalore. We're not afraid to speak against what's not true in the name of truth. If something's not true, but it's going on as truth, expose it. Right? Why be sentimental or falsely, you know, present yourself in a wrong way? Yeah, I was there, and I walked, and they gave me a controlled guided tour because they knew I was an ISKCON sannyasi. They put a person to watch me. So I went there and I went along. But I was inside and, you know, everything is highly arranged nicely. I mean, it's all decorated and there's a gift shop with items in the gift shop that cost over $1,000. Really. Really expensive, high-class gift shop. And then, you know, big restaurant, so many things. But I couldn't wait to get at it because I didn't feel the spiritual energy. When I went to the Vatican, the same thing. When I went into the Vatican, nice building, but you could feel the spiritual energy is not there. When you walk into a temple or a place of worship, you can feel something. And that's based on what's going on with the devotees, whether the devotees are really surrendered or whether the holy name is being chanted enough. You can feel it. But after walking into these places, I didn't feel it in there. I just didn't feel it. It was more like rituals, just external.
One more question in continuation from the previous.
That was my experience.
Yeah. So I don't know much about the Ritwik activity. I never paid too much attention, but I always knew that ISKCON Bangalore was one of those. Now, if it is back in ISKCON, is there very many other temples like that, or do they all follow the same thing that they will come back to ISKCON, or each one is a case, separate case?
There's a few. Well, there was the Calcutta temple that came back first, and then Bangalore, and then there was one place in London also. I think it was Manchester went away, or Birmingham. One of those two fell into Ritwik hands for a while, right? Manchester or Birmingham, I forgot. But then we got it back, I think. So yeah, we're getting it back because ultimately it shows that they don't really have much substance. There's no substance there.
Once they come back, that means there is no more Ritwik. Is that it?
Well, they got their movement still going on. But, you know, they just take over the temple. That also happened in Long Island, too. That was a big fight. Your Guru Maharaj was involved with that directly, that whole Long Island thing many years ago. That one, I think that one settled, too. I'm not sure. No? That's still going on. Yeah. So, anyway, wherever there's true spirituality, you can expect opposition. Prabhupada said, if you're not getting any opposition, that means you're in trouble. Because to preach pure devotional service in the age of Kali means you will bring so much, you'll bring so much hostility towards you. It's just the way it is. People don't want the real thing. They want something less or something at all, not at all. So the indication of success is opposition. That's true. The indication of success is opposition, real success. Yeah.
You already expressed this.
I didn't see anybody leave the room on that one, but anyway.
Not yet.
Stay with us.
You already expressed this, Maharaj, and I was appreciating that you were giving us some examples like Jayadvaita Maharaj's book and some other things. Just a personal expression is for nobody to go look this up on the internet or anything like that.
I missed a few words.
Yeah, not for anybody to go look up on the internet to find out about these things, because basically, you know, you're going to get...
You get caught in the net.
You're going to get trapped with a lot of blasphemy and that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
The devotees' books, if you have some need to find out about it, that's probably the best place to go.
Yeah. The internet is full of a lot of negativity.
Maharaj?
Yeah. This is the next lesson. You're Srila Prabhupada. Okay. Yes.
I can volunteer to make Jayadvaita Maharaj's paper, four-part paper, available for anyone who wants to read it, rather than go online and do all their research.
Yeah. What's the name of the paper?
Why the Rikthviks Have Got It All Wrong.
Yeah. You can also come to me and I'll give you whatever you need also. I have a lot of information. Yes, Patraka?
I guess one way I was trying to understand this is you kind of touched on it that people don't want the real thing. So
generally in Kali Yuga, yeah, they want something less than the real thing.
So I guess in one sense I see it as sort of you get what you're looking for, and in certain cases people fall into this because they're looking for something that's not, you know, oftentimes.
You know, when people come to Krishna consciousness, they come for different reasons. But that's okay. Whatever reason you come, come. But then again, as you stay, you should start to understand, what is this movement about? It's about developing love of God. You may come from material, because of material distress. You may come from some economic thing. You may also come for something personal. That's okay. God says, come, whatever reason you come, come. He's welcoming everyone to come. But then again, then you have to understand, what's the goal, though? The goal is Premu Pumartha Mahan, that we're offering the highest thing. And what is that? How to have a loving relationship with the Lord. How to reawaken our natural love for the Lord. That's what this movement is ultimately about. But we can accommodate people from different walks of life and from different angles of vision, what they're looking for in Krishna consciousness. But those who understand the goal will make the fastest. Others who come for material gain, they may get material gain, but they won't get Krishna. They won't get Krishna. So come, whatever your reason for coming, just come to Krishna consciousness. That's fine. The doors are open to the whole world, no matter who you are, and no matter what your background is. But then again, just chant Hare Krishna. We're offering everyone a chance to chant Hare Krishna, take Krishna prasadam, and learn a little bit about their relationship with God. That's what it's all about. But even if you come for material gain, that's fine. So our doors are wide open. That's what Prabhupada said. This whole world can come into Krishna consciousness. But then again, you have to see what's the goal. There is a goal. Just like if you're going on a journey and you don't know where you're going, you could wind up anywhere. So you, when you're going on a journey, you really have, you have two things in mind: how to get there and what it's like when you get there. So we're teaching, okay, this is not your home. Your home is in the spiritual world with Krishna. And therefore, the Bhagavatam describes what's the spiritual world like and how to get to the spiritual world through day-to-day practical devotional service. It's that simple. That's the goal. But even if you don't have the goal in mind, doesn't matter, chant Hare Krishna. That's Krishna's mercy. Everyone's welcome. But if you want to stay up with the, you want to stay up to speed, then we have to see, what do I need to do to develop love of God? There's something I have to do. And the first thing I have to do is chant, and the second thing I have to do is serve. Let me do some service. That's all. This movement's about serving, about purifying our heart, and about serving. That's all. Service. Okay. See you later. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Fictional Prabhupada no jai. Real Prabhupada ki jai. Okay. Hare Krishna.